Here we go.
All right, man.
Let's put the wheels on here, man. All right. Tim Ryan, we are hurting. We're bummed. We're pissed.
Almost pissed off a little bit.
But I'm also trying to remember it's only September.
You know what I mean, Tim? Like, unhappy is not
almost
enough.
Pissed off a little bit. What does that mean?
Yeah, it's a combination of anger, frustration, all of the above, Tim. A lot of negative emotions. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, how about we just call it this? The agony of defeat.
Very much.
And look, the bigger the stage, the bigger the atmosphere. And it's only week three. But when you go back and think, the last time the fans were there was the NFC Championship game. Levi's was going off last night. Yeah. It was really an incredible atmosphere. And, you know, the bigger those moments and the bigger the atmosphere, the deeper the emotional consequences after the game, whether you win or lose. So the euphoria is higher and the depression is lower, to where you're almost kind of pissed off.
I love it, man. I'm almost pissed off. Yeah.
Almost kind of pissed off.
Yeah.
Thrill of victory, the agony of defeat. Let's start with the biggest headline that's national, which is 37 seconds. Is it too much?
You can't tell Juszczyk not to go into the end zone,
you
Tim.
Tell us,
you know,
Tim. You go back and you're Kyle. You say, hey, Kyle, Juszczyk, you got to fall down on the one next time.
What do you ask your defense to make some stops? Yeah.
What do you think? Give us your take. Tell us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's easy to be the Monday morning quarterback after when you start looking at the clock and nitpicking seconds. Yeah. 37 seconds is clearly 3 seconds too long for Aaron Rodgers. You know, the guy, it's not his first rodeo doing that. And we can get into those two plays and what happened on those two plays. But I think if you're Kyle at the end of the game, and I think Juice scored with once he got in the end zone, it was 37 seconds. So you had him on their heels right there. You do have the timeouts hanging. Could you call a timeout? And you know, you got win or lose on the last play with the ball in your hands would be the question. But hard to predict the future that Juice is going to score here. And then I think there was 12 seconds on the play clock at that point. Now, another option would have been a squib kick, dribble it down there and make the – now, the clock's not going to start till he touches it.
Yeah.
But if you kick a good squib, he's going to want to pick it up and run it. If that thing's squibbing down around the 10-yard line, he wants to get it out to the 25. So you could get a couple seconds there.
Yep.
When Devontae Adams gave himself up at the very end, to me, a coaching point Ufanga came up and touched him down just about as quick as he could. Now, he was running the dig route, and he fell down right when he caught it. But I would leave that to the referee to decide when the clock stops when he gave himself up.
Interesting,
There's a lot of ways to find a couple seconds.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's the bottom line is it was an epic game. Got beat by a 3-time MVP who is an unbelievable gunslinger.
Yep.
Devontae Adams, and you know, he takes a knockout shot and then gets back in the game, which I've seen that happen before. You guys, I mean, it's happened a lot, but the one that comes to mind was the Redskin game. The Washington football team game, when Kyle, I think it was his first year, and Pierre Garçon had just absolutely knocked their safety out, and he was rigid. I mean, his arms were, you know, just stuck up in the air when he was down on the ground. He got back in that lineup. So concussions are different. Could he easily just been a chin shot, you know, where he got that nerve in the chin hit? And his head was fine. His brain didn't bounce against his skull. So that's why they do the protocol. That's why they got the independent neurologist. And he's just a great player in creating separation. And they went after that side of the field. Those two plays at the end, you know, the first one, I think Fred Warner is going to kick himself that he didn't get more depth in that cover too.
Yeah, went right over the hand,
And, I mean, it was literally a couple inches over his hand. And there's nothing threatening him underneath. He's got to get down the thing. I mean, that's you'll give up the 7 or 8 yard route, and now they've got to run it. That's going to chew up time on the clock. But the deep in cut behind Fred in between the two safeties, I know he would love to get on his horse, turn his hips, and get back there a little quicker. And, you know, he was kind of backpedaling and just kind of scanning the field in front of him and couldn't really get the kind of depth that he needed for that play. And look, the 49ers were fortunate getting some calls going their way last night. Yeah. But that throw, if you go back and watch it, and Ebukam had his best rush of the night inside, and he was barreling down on Aaron Rodgers right inside, you know, inside that left guard. I think Runyon's kid. And I mean, it was literally a grab of the shoulder pad, a hook and a pull to the ground. Boger was looking right at it, didn't call it. And then the next one, it was, you know, they looked like the last play when they got it down at 3 seconds to the other one to Devontae Adams. Yep. The same play to the other side. It was a deep dig route over on their sideline. Looked like about a 16-yard in cut. And it was free access. You know, obviously you don't want them to get two plays and throw it out of bounds and then get a little closer and then have another opportunity. But very, very soft over there with Demo, and understandably with what Devontae Adams was doing all night. Huff was in his back pedal. And Aaron Rodgers, you know, made a great play again, a great throw, and there was not a lot of pressure on that play. I heard last night post game, and it's easy, as you said, Mac, to be pissed, you know, and to be kind of pissed off, I guess. But you know, I heard a lot of chatter about where was the pass rush and where. Put the ball out clock on Aaron Rodgers, and you tell me where the pass rush was. It was about halfway there when the ball was coming out in under 2 seconds.
Yeah, you know, and also
he was getting rid of the rock quickly, and to throw those deep balls, you don't have to hold it for 3 seconds. The ball's coming out.
Yeah. You know, Tim, talking to Tim Ryan on the UMI guest line, you're right, and he did have that incredibly quick release last night, and I think he could feel and see Nick Bosa just bearing down on him on a lot of snaps. And, you know, I thought it was pretty effective the way Green Bay handled Bosa, not only on the offensive line, but bringing over tight ends to help block and chip him and stuff like that.
What about the other guys, though, like Ford, Armstead, Kinlaw?
Well, Tim, speak to that.
Yeah, well, I mean, again, yeah. the ball, you go back and watch the plays. And look, you're not going to win every time.
Right.
And Armstead had a sack. And you know, Kinlaw's, he's got to be better in there as a pass rusher. I think DJ Jones, they had Ebukam in there a lot for the turbo unit, especially at the end. DJ can rush the pass. They can rush the passer. Give the Packers some credit. They did a good job blocking. But at the end of the day, the quarterback's a Band-Aid for everything. And I promise you, if you go back and look at a lot of those plays, what is a defensive lineman? I know rushing the passer in practice, it's a three-second clock. When do they want the quarterback getting the ball out? It's a three-second clock. That's traditional passing game. Mm-hmm. 3 seconds to get there. You go back and look at a lot of those plays, and that ball is out in 1.8, 2.3. And that's why I talked about getting ready for the game, that, you know, the edge pressure, and they're gonna see that all year. Snug chips, running back chips, tight end chips. They're going to honor those edge rushers and make sure that they don't win quick. And then that tells me the guys inside have got to win quick. It's, you know, it's not all about the power moves and the bull rush, and you got to catch a guy. And when they're soft setting on stuff like that, it's hard to catch a guy leaning, and you're by him quick as a hiccup to, you know, that gut pressure on the quarterback. So it was a variety of things, but I think the big thing is that ball was coming out quick. And they weren't in a lot of third and longs. And the DPIs on third down were an absolute killer early in that game.
Yeah, what'd you think of those?
Look, here's what I always ask myself when I see a defensive pass interference call. Did the defender materially affect the receiver's ability to catch the football?
Good, yeah.
I mean, it's that simple in my mind. And the Demo, it was the same play that they got Kwan with, exactly. And the go route out of the slot, really the nine route to Lazard. And, boy, he was in great position, but he had a hold of his wrist. I mean, and I don't even know if he knew he had a hold of his wrist. They used to, and I thought it looked like Demo had him with his right hand, had Lazard's left wrist grabbed. So it's really acts as an arm bar. So now that arm can't come up, right? So now he's trying to catch it one-handed. The ball was out in front of them. Was it catchable? They're almost always catchable in the officials' minds. I'm telling you that right now, unless it's outside the white stripe.
Yeah.
So he had a hold of his arm, it looked like, of his wrist. So I see it. I mean, it was a material effect. The Emmanuel Mosley one, the quarterback drew that one. Mosley had Devontae Adams hipped up like a glove, and they both were turning, or at least Adams had his head turned to the inside towards the field, expecting that over that shoulder. was really good coverage. Aaron Rodgers gave him a chance, threw him open to the outside, and as soon as Devontae turned his head to go get the ball, there was the contact from Emmanuel Mosley, materially affected with the ball in the air, his ability to get back to the football. Was that catchable? Again, unless it's outside the white stripe, those dudes always think they're catchable, the officials. And then the Fred play, that was almost just bad luck and bad timing because Aaron Rodgers, we've all seen him do it. Saw him do it in the Lion game. You're in that kind of coverage, and the ball is going to – it's an ear hole shot. It's going to whiz right by the defender's ear hole and right into the arms of Tonyan, the tight end. So Fred's got to run with him down the middle of the field. You always talk about staying in phase and staying on top of him and staying tight. But if your head's not turned and you don't time – see, what they're trying to do is when the ball gets there, he wants to knock it out. Because a lot of guys, you turn your head on at that moment, and now there's going to be some a little bit of separation created. When your head turns, your hips turn, you slow down a little bit, and there's going to be a little separation, and you don't want that, especially on that kind of throw. So Fred's trying to time that thing up perfect. As that ball's going to get there, he's going to knock it out. If there's contact in the upper body and the defender does not have his head turned playing the ball, they're calling it every time.
Yeah. Frustrating. But as you pointed out in an earlier comment, yep, Tim, the Niners did get some calls, too. That one, am I blanking right now, but who was the Packer that was called for running into Ayuk or Sanu?
Yeah, it was the Ayuk.
Was it Alexander?
DPI down the middle of the field.
Anyway, I think the Niners got a good break on that
Jimmy
one.
The intentional grounding.
The Jimmy intentional grounding.
I agree. Yeah.
So you got it, you know.
On that one.
I mean, the refs were trending all over social media last night, is getting crushed, but I don't know.
Yeah, what's new?
And we got to talk more about so much meat and potatoes in this game. I mean, there's a million ways to go. Let's start with the run game. No Elijah Mitchell was tough. And it's funny, you see Sermon, listen, I'm not, you know, it was his first game, so I'm not, you know, you got to give him a little slack, but it looks like Mitchell is a better kind of one-cut guy right now than Sermon, is he? Or did the Packer D-line?
That's why he got a uniform week one and week two.
The Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band and they must think this kid must have just handed everything, or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
This offense is about vision, knowing where you're going to go, but one could make your read and get downhill. Would you love to make a house call on every run? Hell yeah. But a lot of these runs are blocked up. The coaches are expecting 3-4 yards. 3-4 yards is acceptable. -1 is not. Mm-hmm. Right. In big moments. And I thought give the Packers credit. Kenny Clark is a beast now on the inside.
Yeah.
He can wreck your game. And he had a big impact on that game last night, both as a rusher on the backward pass and as a run defender. And he is a load to block in there, especially when he's got some kind of cue on the snap count, because he was rolling off the rock a few times. And that truck gets running and moving. He's hard to stop. But at the same time, you know, you watch certain, and God, was he fantastic in college. But in this league, you got to really, and you guys hear me say it all the time, think four, get 40. Squeeze out what you can by going north and south. And there's even, you know, illustrations of that watching the game. And there was one where he cut back, and it was maybe his nicest run of the night. And if he just keeps running, he probably gets 6 more yards. But he saw some color in front and out towards their sideline. He saw color flash in front, and he tried to cut back for the big play. Well, now you're cutting back into 6 defenders that are on their horse swarming like bees at you.
Yeah.
And then you end up, maybe what could have got you 6 more ends up being only 1 more because you're trying to do too much. And it'll happen for him. He'll figure it out that he's just got to go.
Yeah.
You know, it was a great cut on the touchdown play, really. I mean, they had Savage sitting in the hole. He stuck his foot in the ground and got over the top. So he can do it. But I think when you've got hell, I only played running back 1 year, and it was in Pop Warner, and I wasn't very good. But I know when you've been running the ball as long as he has, you know, in two big-time colleges with big-time production, and you've got a running style, it's going to be some work to break that in terms of, you know, that shifty side-to-side movement.
Mm-hmm.
Le'Veon Bell is one of the only guys that really, you know, when he had those couple of great years, and that's been working with an offensive line with the Steelers for years, where he's feeling the blocks and feeling that whole power game and slowing down and starting. This is about get it and go, bro.
Talking to Tim Ryan on the Ubi guest line. I just wanted to talk about Jimmy Garoppolo a little bit too. And, you know, especially the second half he had, Tim. I mean, touchdown drives of 83 yards, 44 yards, 75 yards. I thought he showed a lot of guts and heart last night too, just taking the beating that he took and getting up time after time and kind of delivering the mail in critical situations. Just wanted you to speak to his performance a little bit.
And speak to the fact that he had two turnovers that Aaron Rodgers did not.
Well,
great play by Jair Alexander. And one thing I think, Jimmy's got to get guys off his trail a little bit when he's kind of telegraphing where he's throwing. And I got to go back and look at the tape. But, you know, in all quarterbacks, and Kittle was clearly the guy right there. It looked like he held on him. Because that's the other side of the field corner that came in and picked that one off and poached it out of the air. So I think would, you know, give him credit. That was a great play by him from the neck up. It was a center field catch. I mean, it was just out in front of the fingertips of George Kittle on a little out and up, a little wiggle route where he got down the middle of the field. You know, so looking and holding guys off, and Jimmy can certainly do that because his mind's eye knows where his guys are going to be. So, you know, just do something to hold that guy over there. And he did not take the bait. That was a great play by him. Now the defense held on that drive, you know, after that takeaway, and another 2 weeks in a row, a terrific goal line stand by the defense. And then the one on the screenplay, the backward pass. And I think he knew it right away when the ball came out, because I think he was pointing at the, like, McGlinchey, get it. It's live. That ball is live. Get it.
Yeah.
Again, I think it was a screen from what I remember, and Kenny Clark won too fast. So you want to block that guy a little bit longer. So he got through, and then Trey was the screen running back, if I remember, and it was all congested in there, and he was up in the line of scrimmage, and there was Packers and 49ers everywhere. So that was not a good play, and that's one where and you don't want to take a sack there. I get it, but that's one where you probably just take the sack and you know, punt another down play another down or punt, because they did get three off of that drive.
Yeah.
Obviously, which ended up being a big difference in the game. Now the 49ers were able to come back, and that's what I love about Jim Garoppolo, man. He is, and listen, he was getting tattooed a couple times. That busted the busted protection when Preston Smith hit him, he was hurt.
Yep.
That was a spinal tap. They're kicking him in the shins. They're tripping him. They're doing all kinds of stuff, and he's just pulling himself up off the grass and really made some good throws when he had to, you know, at crunch time. So I thought he played really well again. I love his command of the offense. It certainly looked shaky early in terms of he didn't look comfortable back there. And again, I'll have to watch the tape a little bit harder or watch it for the first time and see why. I didn't see a lot of guys open.
Agreed. There was good coverage by the Packers corner.
There was good coverage by that Packer defense, and that's where they thrive now. They got a lot of athleticism and they got really good secondary players. And we've talked about it. The safeties are really good. Jair Alexander is one of the best. And that rookie, Eric Stokes, has got something to him now. Not only fast, but long arms and gets after it. So I thought they attacked the matchups. I thought the play calling was good. I mean, when you saw, I think Chris Barnes went down in the game, and they started hammering that part of the field when they were put the replacement linebackers in there and doing some different things to stress those guys. I thought Sanu had some nice catches, had some big plays. The Sanu review, which was a little
new Sanu review.
I like that.
Interesting. Trent Sherfield.
Coming right at you.
Trent Sherfield.
Right at you, baby. Here
totally.
You go. And got that one. And the ball can move a little bit. and it appeared to, called on a catch. They stayed with it.
Yeah, that was a weird one. That was really a weird one.
This new review, and LaFleur was hot throughout that game. How about him spiking his challenge flag right in the ref?
He was out of his mind last night.
I think this was personal with him and Kyle.
It seemed to be.
Man.
A lot of emotion, man.
Tim, the cameras caught him throwing the profanity.
Yeah, mother, father, stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I know one thing. I've been in my fair share of fights, the one I always wanted to win more than any was against my brother, bro.
That's the one.
So those guys have such a long relationship, and that's obvious. And you know, I think he's still salty from the two games in 2019.
Yeah.
Hey, I need to know who came out on top of the brothers Ryan brawls. Like who got the better of them?
Listen, I got my ass whipped till I was about 15.
Okay.
And for all the little brothers out there,
yeah.
We grew up boxing, so we fought all the time.
Oh man.
And not just with the gloves on, like all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
When you get bigger than your older brother, when he's a year and a half older, and you get bigger when you're 5 years old,
yeah.
and he's nasty and mean, there's going to be years of problems. So we probably till I was about 15. And again, for all the younger brothers out there, once you do it once and you take down the older bro, you'll never fight again.
You are the man, dude. I'm so glad I asked.
The Ryan, there's so many things
I can see
about.
Tim in the weight room, though. Listen to Scorpion.
Hey,
don't forget the
Bundini Brown to this whole thing. Their old man. Sending you two guys
Customato.
Into the ring.
Customato.
Here was the line every day when he got home from work: put on the plastic sweats, boys.
Oh, jeez. Put the books down. Get the sweats on.
Right there.
Yeah, yeah.
We'd go up. Do you guys remember Reed's Sporting Goods?
Yes, I do remember Reed's
Sporting
Goods.
On White Road over there?
Maybe not.
The South Bay crowd.
I thought it was something else.
Yeah. I know Mill Valley won't remember Reed's
Oshman's. You go Oshman's? Yeah? No?
No, that was above our pay scale. We did do Reed's, and they didn't have, you know, everyone now, they'll get the suits, the bottoms, and the top. These were like the full suit, zip up, put them on, boys.
Like the guy in Vision Quest, like Matt Modane in Vision Quest, man.
Cut weight and wrestling.
Yeah, the moon suit.
Yeah. Did you wrestle in high school, Tim?
Wrestling was the only sport I ever quit in my whole life.
Wow.
Because I was a hooper in high school.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. You could play. That's right.
But we boxed. Murph, we boxed from age 6 to 14 and, boxed 64 fights. I had my brother won the Nationals twice. We traveled all over the United States to fight. My brother went to Ohio twice, as I said, and won that. By the time I got to junior high, I was 7th grade, like 5'11", 175, and I had to fight, and I had to get down to, like, I think I had to get down to 145.
Yeah, that's crazy, man. Yeah.
And I was so tired. I was so tired of cutting weight. And then, you know, I was going to be a heavyweight at 14 years old. And I said, well, let me try wrestling. And I had my first tournament. We had a dual meet. I had one move. It was a head and arm. I won everything the first meet. And then we go, because I was, you know, bigger than most of the other guys that were wrestling.
Sure.
And then the next week practice, I was rolling around on the mat. We had like three guys on the team with infantigo all over their face.
Oh.
I had a guy's crotch stuck in my grill, and this is it, man. I'm done
with this. Yeah.
I'm done. I picked up a basketball and never looked back.
Dude, you're like, give me a cheeseburger, and let me get back to the weight room.
I picked up the round ball and said, I am done cutting weight, and I'm done with infantigo.
Then you started ripping down 18 boards a game there.
The game progressed rapidly, I will say that.
I don't want a 50-50 ball on the hardwood with Timmy diving for it.
I don't want to go in the paint with Timmy. Hell no.
By the way, this is amazing, by the way. I could keep you here all morning, but we got to let you go. But we'll leave it because we never get you at the end of the week. So just you've said a lot about this game, and we could do more and more. You'll talk all week on KMBR. But I just want to get a quick look ahead.
Yeah, if you could.
It's not
the end
of the world, man. There's 17, right? So listen to this. I just saw this stat. Russ Wilson has never lost 3 in a row as a Hawk.
And Jimmy G has never lost back-to-back regular season games.
Whoa.
Yep.
Well, something's got to give. Glad the game is here. you know, Seattle, look, we've had challenges with the go ball, right, the last couple weeks.
And Timmy, the corner.
Nobody throws a better go ball than Russ Wilson.
The corner health now. I just read that Josh Norman was in the hospital all night spitting up blood. Ugh.
That
was
on Pro Football Talk. Yeah. So let's hope that, you know, that doesn't sound good.
No. That was very creepy to read on Pro Football Talk, yeah.
You know, Metcalf, we've seen some of those matchups with E-Man. E-Man's going to challenge you and get after you. But, he's just such a huge target in Metcalf. And Lockett, again, the deep ball and what they can do there. So that's going to have to get fixed. The run defense is going to have to improve against Chris Carson because he is an absolute truck. And they're going to have to figure out how to run it on offense and who that's going to be. And hopefully Elijah's back. If not, hopefully the light goes on for Sermon. And you know, he's a very good back, but he starts slamming it hard up inside. We'll see if they can bring a couple of the other guys along and get them in the mix. But, bro, it's probably going to go down to the wire.
Yeah, here we go.
This is a battle of freaking attrition in this league. And it is nasty, man. It's a war zone out there. And I don't mean that, you know, literally, but
I got you.
Just
yeah.
What's going on and the high impact plays and the high drama, and it'll just be another one of those, man. It's going to be a great game.
Totally with you. And by the way, leave you on the positive note that the text line's blowing up on the Reed Sporting Goods shout out. They remember, they're with you, Timmy. And the guy says it was across the street from Jim Plunkett's James Lick High School.
Perfect.
Is that right?
James Lick High School. That's right. That's right.
Yeah, man.
I love it. And listen, we boxed. We started boxing in 1973 at Silver Creek High School.
Dude, that's where we started
in the police athletic league.
This is San Jose Bonafides right here, baby. All right, let's go. Hey, always a great conversation.
It is, man. Thank
Look
you,
forward
Tim.
To awesome. You all week, buddy. Great call, as always. Be good, brother.
Got 14 more, boys. Let's go.
Let's go, Tim Ryan, on a Monday morning. You feel better now?
A little bit, actually. Tim, a little bit, actually.
Yeah.
The boxing tails, the wrestling, the crotch in the face. There's a lot to unpack, as the kids say.
Okay, cooler of content is rich. Hums and bums haven't even happened. Man, this Monday.
And you promised tales of great Nikki Turturro, so I'm like kind of getting eager.
We'll see.
Wow, listen.
Pauline, you'll be the judge of that next.
Okay.
Right. 104.5 and 680. These sports.
I'll be at the Monaco Hotel on 7th at Pine at 8 a.m. Saturday morning. Why don't you bring those Twitter muscles by and you can punch me in the mouth.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.